to Betting 360, your number one source for horse racing and sports betting insights. Coming around the bend is your host, David Duffield, with another expert interview to give you the winning edge.
Hello and welcome to Betting 360. I'm your host, David Duffield, and each week I bring a special guest onto the podcast to look at punting from all different angles. This is part two of an interview we did with Dominic Byrne. He was the biggest bookmaker in Australia when he was still in his 20s and has had a long and very successful career. A lot of that comes down to, I suppose you'd call it a supercomputer, but yeah, we want to delve into that some more and also just find out what the everyday punter can learn from someone as successful as Dom. What about horses, either last start or recent starting prices? I know a lot of the bigger players are of the view that, you know, the races run once and luck in running and other factors can come into it. So, you know, what the market assessment of a horse is can be a good guide. Are you of the same belief?
Particularly with babies, I think it's a very good indicator to know that the public like a horse considerably, particularly if it lost. So, you know, there was something that informed the public to that view when you didn't have the information. Let's say it was a first starter or second starter. So early on, it's valuable. The trouble with it later on is that, you know, you can't always easily measure the factors that went into its most recent price. So last start, it might have had a whole bunch of favourable things that made it a 3-to-1 chance, where if it didn't have all those favourable things, it might have been a 12-to-1 chance. And, you know, the most recent price as a factor, in my opinion, loses significance with proportionally to the number of starts.
Okay. Does breeding play any part in your analysis?
No, it doesn't. I mean, I would like to have... I remember early on when I was betting heavily on, you know, in the 80s when I had a big start on the barrow trials, and I used to have a colleague who would... It was very clever at analysing pedigrees. So, you know, I would hear and more, and he would analyse the pedigrees for me on the basis that who had a two-year-old pedigree, who had a first start pedigree, etc. And from that perspective, it was quite valuable. I'm pretty sure it's probably still valuable, but it's not something that I've considered myself expert enough to. But there's plenty of data out there and plenty of information out there about different ratings on, and that you can then multiply, you know, the sire by the dam, and you know, come up with a figure, and you know, proportion of first starters to win by this sire and et cetera. So there's plenty of data out there. I don't know how much of it gets into the public, I have to say. I haven't tested.
Okay, something I know you believe is valuable is speed maps. I know the importance of them myself, but how do you incorporate something like that that, you know, in many ways is subjective, I suppose, in interpreting it anyway, into what's otherwise a quantitative model?
Okay, well, my speed maps aren't subjective.
Oh, sorry, I mean the interpretation of them,
sure.
Not the...
Yes, okay, well, neither is my interpretation of them. So I, you know, it is a valuable input, and, you know, I've been, I drew them manually for a long, long period. I remember the first ones I drew, I actually did it in prosaic form. I wrote them as a phantom call. So I would write a phantom call with maybe a half a page, which I write, physically write, you know, I think Tontonen will go to the front from so-and-so, he'll be fifth on the fence. And I did that for quite a while before it dawned on me. I know it probably sounds dumb, right? It's like sliced bread, I guess. I made lows for a long time before it dawned on me that I should be just drawing them. And it's then that I discovered that, you know, drawing them was really quite valuable. And then I put them in grids and advanced it a bit more. And ultimately, I ended up writing algorithms that did all for me. So, but your question was, you know, not just about that. It's about, well, you're thinking that the inputs should be subjective. Well, they don't have to be. I think if you were doing speed maps and it is a subjective input that you do have to put in because you haven't got the algorithm, then it becomes pretty apparent with practice that, you know, which horses are advantaged and disadvantaged, and which ones that, if there are disadvantaged. I mean, I'm always price conscious when it comes to this. I'm not too scared to bet a horse that's a good price if it looks significantly disadvantaged on the map, because things can unfold differently naturally because, you know, let's say it looks like it's going to be a really slow speed. Well, all of a sudden you get four or five horses ridden out of their comfort zone and they put a pen through themselves. So whatever probability they added up to, you know, is available for the rest of the horses. So you were backing something that was going to be sitting back and looked significantly disadvantaged. You can bet you're going to get a good price about it. I'm very price conscious, as I say, and a horse that's hard in the market, I'm very critical of. If I don't like its map, I don't back it.
And yeah, you're right about how things can turn out a little bit differently to what you expect. I mean, all the trainers, owners, jockeys, they're all doing their speed maps or buying them. And if everything points to one thing happening, often the opposite can occur. Just talking about, I suppose, selecting a race that you're interested in or, you know, filtering out the ones that you're not, what types of races get you really excited and you do want to get involved?
Oh, okay, so I can probably answer that question secondly. The first filter would be the difference between my price and the public price. That's always the first guide. You know, I would sort of fairly regularly just roll over a race pretty quickly if my market just looks, you know, identical to the public's, because, you know, all I'd be doing is sort of like, you know, subjectively fiddling around with this or that. So, and I don't like to make too many subjective decisions. I mean, in fact, I rarely like to make a subjective. What was the other part of your question?
Oh, just what type of races, like, is it, you know, where you want to take on the favourite? Is it certain distances, stakes?
Easily the most successful races for us are the top grade. For some reason, the computer seems to be pretty good at the top group one races and group two races, and I suspect, touch wood, that the people who read my articles on Betfair would have found that, you know, we get accurate quite a lot of the big races. So when we get them, we get some wrong, of course, but, you know, over a period, I think the people who follow the Betfair are a fair way in front.
Yeah, and an example is Green Moon in the Melbourne Cup. Obviously, that went around at a good price pre-post, but also on the day. Do you focus on, you know, a certain part of the market? Do you mind, you know, being on one that is short but is still value in your eyes, or are you looking at the longer shots?
You know, it's pretty regular that we gravitate to the favourite in big races. I think often in big races, you know, people will find a lot of reasons to promote 20 to 40 to 1 chances in a couple of percent. Well, they all add up to getting you 9-4, the 6-4 chance. I think the top end of the market is probably where the best value sits.
All right, so when you have identified an overlay, how do you then calculate your staking, or maybe, you know, how would you suggest a punter calculates their staking? Because if you've got a horse assessed at, say, $4 and you can get $8, how do you determine your bet, especially considering, I know you value what the market's telling you, or, you know, the wisdom of the crowd?
I do take the wisdom of the crowd into account, but I'd put if I had a horse 4-1 that was 4-1, I would put more on a horse I had 4-1, which is 8-1, than one which is 4-1 and the public's offering 4-1. The big spread in advantage should always be taken advantage of. By advantage, I mean expectation. So, you know, if they're paying you double what you think they should be getting, you really should be betting quite confidently.
And what about on the other side then? If you've assessed the horse at $8 and the market has it at $4, how quickly do you want to take that on? Or I suppose on the other side, you know, how much do you want to look into it to see if there's something that the computer's missed, or just, you know, a certain factor in the race where you wouldn't look to get involved at all?
Oh, well, you know, in a circumstance like that, it might be you still don't get a bet, because, you know, I used to do a very harsh market, but I think around 93 is probably a reasonable percentage to do a market to, because the public has got so much smarter. You know, I used to do them to 83% when I was betting quite heavily, and I found that because there was a pretty big difference between my prices and the public prices, you know, I was looking for the, you know, really good overlays and betting very well on them. But now that the public has got closer to my price, or vice versa, that if you've got say one turn of the board longer than your price, I think that's good enough to have a bet. I think that if you find that your market disagrees with one horse significantly and you end up having to bet a lot of runners in a race, well, that's okay if the favourite's, you know, 2-1 on and you can sort of like justify it. Well, if the favourite's 2-1 on, you should just march ahead and do it. But if it's a more open race and you've got to outlay a fair bit of the percentage, you know, I always like to have a little bit of a second look to see because the computer can't factor everything, of course, right? So, well, let's say you had a horse assessed 10-1 and it was 2-1 and it was first up from a spell and, you know, it might be that you look at it and you find, well, you know, there are reasons why I can see why this is that price. And when I mix it with the public and I turn it from 10-1 into 3-1, then all of my overlays disappear proportionally and I could stay out of that race. So betting blindly to the probabilities is a little dangerous, but, you know, I still come back to the point, that's if they're marginal, I still come back to the point that if they're a significant overlay, don't look too hard into why you're wrong, because, you know, you're going to regret it over a period if you're doing good probabilities.
All right. What are your thoughts on each-way betting?
Oh, well, each-way betting's enormous if you can get set, right? Does anyone bet each-way anymore these days? Because a quarter of the odds in plenty of races is, 240 or 260%. So, but nobody does that anymore, do they? Or are you referring just to winning betting for a place as well as the win with the bookmakers?
Yeah, I mean, in some of the races that we'll target, you know, we might bet two or three horses in a race, and we often get the question, you know, why wouldn't you just back your top rater each way?
Oh, I see. Okay. Yeah, I was, you know, traditionally an each way bet is just, you know, where a bookmaker put up his, you know, sign, and you've got a quarter of the odds of place. Well, you know, that was money for jam, right? I remember all the surveys I ever did, we won much more for a place than we did for a win. But that was when the bookies were betting a quarter, but now they bet like a fifth or a sixth or a tenth sometimes, you know, depending upon the spread of the market probabilities in the public. It's all about value once again, and betting for a place is a particularly interesting animal because I don't think all horses should be fractionalised equally. So there'd be punters who would look at a race and say, well, here's a horse that's got 3 wins and 0 placings out of 20 starts and has drawn barrier 13 in a field of 18 and it's 10-1. Well, you don't really want to be taking 5-2 a place, but it might win at the rate of 10-1. And then there's another horse that's got, you know, 2 wins and, you know, 7 placings with the same number of starts and it's drawn barrier 1 and it's 10-1. Well, you know, you'll find if you went on to the Betfair place market on those two horses, one's likely to be 2s and one's likely to be 3s, which reflects probably more accurately their prospect of running 1, 2, 3.
Okay, so you've worked closely with Betfair in recent times and you know, put a lot of previews and reviews out there. What suggestions would you have for the everyday punter to help them get the most value out of being a Betfair client?
I'd like to think that, you know, not in a smart-ass way, I'd like to think, though, that I'm, you know, informing the general public about ways to improve their way they do form. You know, an eye-opener to new approaches. So, you know, we focus mainly on the main races because they're the identifiable horses and the ones that the punters are going to open up the form guide and want to get engaged in. And so I think that the work I'm doing at Betfair, it's not that many races a year. I don't know, it might be 100 races a year, I suppose. It does open up people's eyes, I guess, from a Betfair marketing review. Betfair would, you know, like the punters to read my article and then go straight over to the Betfair site, and which is, you know, I believe what they're doing, because, you know, they can open up my article and then refer immediately into the market and see that the prices I've got up are, you know, reasonably close to and how they may have moved recently and whether it's time to put a bet on. And, you know, my markets go out on a Friday. So, you know, it's pretty often that the market moves in the direction that we've indicated. So some people are playing it as an arbitrage game to get overs. Some people just like to get it and put their bets on the following day with Betfair. So I think that Betfair's, you know, doing well out of the arrangement.
And you see when you're on course, all the on-course bookmakers, how much notice they take of Betfair and the price movements. What clues do you take from, you know, say for horses drifting on Betfair rather dramatically late? Is that a real concern for you?
You wouldn't like to see it. You don't like to see it, really. I think last minute movements are really quite valuable for punters. I mean, you know, if you've got the patience to wait till, really quite late, you can get some pretty good information watching the disparity of prices. I remember there was one at Christmas over in West Australia where I think it came $4.20 into $4 at the track, and it was $8 or $9 on Betfair.
And it ran like an $8 chance?
Or? Hey, sure. Yeah, it did. It's Group 1 race, I think. It was Group 1 or Group 2 race. I thought, that's just crazy overs, you know. And I don't know what investigation was made by authorities into that run-up, but that'd be scary if you just took the $4.20 each way, right?
Well, you don't have to watch the race, really. We'll just finish up with a little bit of talk about the Cups, if that's all right, and we're not strong proponents of betting a long way out, but, if there's some good value there, I don't mind mentioning it to people and they can make up their own mind. Is there a horse that you think is a standout at all this stage? Say, we'll start with the Melbourne Cup, the big one.
Well, at the moment, it's not a standout, of course, but, we did amplify. I was on the radio just before Puissance de Lune won at Flemington and said that I think this is the Cup horse for next year, and it was 25 at the time, so if you had a ticket on that, it would be, okay. Is there a Japanese horse coming down here this year? Is there talk of... If there is one coming down here, I'd be particularly quite interested.
Yeah, as far as I know, there is one Japanese horse. I think it went around in the favourite in the Group 1 on a couple of weeks back and didn't do much, but they are planning to bring it down.
Yes. Okay. So there's a lot of water to go under the bridge. Betting early, as you said earlier, I was tipping Green Moon 5 months before the race and it was 20 and 25 to 1. Well, it was 55 to 1 on Betfair 1 week before the race. So, for all your brilliance, you didn't even get I think it paid $22 on the day. So it's hard to get overs. I've got a lot of work to do in the meantime, but there are some factors that I've written up before. I write them up every year for the public that look at positive outcomes to, regressing Melbourne Cup winners and coming up with some positive factors. And one of the most valuable ones I've found, and I've been talking about it since Maccabi when I was on TV back, 9 years ago, I think, they have an abbreviated, very, very short number of runs in their autumn campaign. Increasingly, trainers have cottoned on to this and there's more each year, but it's still only really a reasonable small number each year. But there's a couple that have been, Puissance and Fioronte, who are the two at the top of the markets, they certainly will qualify on that factor. And I've got to say that, it was hard not to be impressed by Fioronte, and you'd have to say that at the moment he's probably the horse that I think would be very hard to beat in the Cup.
And if you own It's a Done Deal, which races would you aim him for?
Oh, I think I'd aim for the Cox Plate, and I'd aim for it fourth up. I think I actually wrote something to this impact, to this effect, for Betfair. Maybe third up in the Cox Plate and fourth up in the McKinnon. I wouldn't be going for the Cups. If you want to go for the Cups, wait till wait another year. But by which time, of course, the horse will probably be at stud, which is another shame in Australian horse racing. But for this year, he's going to be mighty hard to beat with the absence of Piero and All Too Hard. He's going to be extremely hard to beat, It's a Done Deal, in races next year.
And if you're lucky enough to own 5.5 star, where would you aim him?
Oh, for the Cups, and I'd give him as many runs as you could possibly get into him. He just keeps getting better as he with the more and more runs he has. He's a definitely gifted stayer, and he'll just keep going, I think. He'll just keep running and running and running.
Excellent. All right, we'll leave it there for now, Dom. There's plenty of other questions I could ask you, but we'll leave that for another time. Really appreciate your time today and definitely your openness as well. It's, I'm sure a lot of guys will get a lot out of it.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks for tuning in to Betting360. Get more in-depth analysis, tips and that betting edge by heading over to championpicks.com.au, where you'll find a full transcript of this episode. If you like the show, share us with a fellow punter or drop by iTunes to leave us your thoughts. Betting 360, punting from all angles.